Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
Hello, my name is Mike, and I'm a systems engineer for a bank that you've probably never heard of. I have a little time on my hands right now, so I thought I might share my story to see if anyone else has had something similar happen to them. Everything is fine, and there's no reason to be concerned. Please, listen to my story, and if you can respond without panicking, I would appreciate your input. Sheila and I met on the East Coast in one of the largest cities there. I won't specify which, so I don't have to worry about complications later. Our relationship moved quickly, and pretty soon we were living together, and before we knew it, we were married with a child on the way. Our place was nice, but every year, the storm season brought the possibility of home loss. So, rather than constantly worrying about losing our place and all our belongings, we decided to move west. Our daughter, Elaine, was 6 years old by the time we decided to make a change. She had always been quiet, but a couple months before leaving, she was finally diagnosed with a learning disability. We moved into our new house at the beginning of summer. We had struggled to find a school that could provide the help she needed. When we finally found a place that could help care for her, the instructor called us in after the first week. She had always been quiet. She focused on a drawing. She would turn off TVs, radios, and anything else that might distract her. Most of the time, you didn't even see her face, just the top of her head as she focused on her work. As she got older, she continued to focus on her art. Other children branched out, made friends, began to communicate, but not Elaine. Elaine stayed locked in her own world, where she constantly focused on reflecting everything she saw through her pen. Sheila took things harder than I did. At first, she thought it was a phase, that Elaine was just shy and preferred to stay in her own world. She wasn't too concerned, but as the months went by without improvement, Sheila got more scared. It started with her lashing out at me. "You're never around. How do you think she's supposed to get better if you never spend time with her? I spend time with her as much as I can. We both have jobs. There's only so much time in a day. You think this is my fault? I'm saying that. I have a full-time job and still spend time with her. Why can't you? Does your job stop you from helping just like me?" Then she started lashing out at Elaine. It must have been a weekend, back when we lived in our old house. I remember watching Elaine sitting next to the window during an afternoon rainstorm. She was frantically trying to capture the motion of the willows that lined our backyard when Sheila called for her. Sheila wanted Elaine to come to the kitchen for a musical therapy. Elaine did not respond. She was completely enraptured with the rainstorm, watching the willows writhe in the shower and breeze. Sheila called Elaine again, more insistent this time. I could hear impatience beginning to curdle in Sheila's voice. "Elaine, your mother's calling you." Elaine's head swiveled to look at me before turning back to the rainstorm. Sheila must have heard me, because a moment later, she came marching out into the living room. It sounded like she was trying to drive her feet through the floor by stomping. Elaine remained oblivious until Sheila grabbed her arm at the elbow. Sheila shouted her first, middle, and last name, as if using the complete thing would guarantee her attention. Taking Elaine's elbow, she began to lift her from the seat. With the connection to her subjects broken, Elaine unloaded a guttural hiss at Sheila and promptly took a swing at her with a free arm, nearly tearing Sheila's prized Celtic braid necklace. The fist arced wide, missing her mother. Aghast, Sheila jerked Elaine's arm, throwing her off balance, and brought her hand up, slapping Elaine. I rose from my chair, but had not tried to stop what was clearly in motion. Elaine broke free of Sheila's grasp and ran off to her room. She slammed the door and proceeded to demolish her possessions in a fit of rage. This wasn't the worst, or even the first incident with Elaine, but it felt like a turning point. The point when Elaine began to drift away from Sheila. I had hoped the move might put some distance between our family and those feelings, but I think we brought it with us, just like our other baggage. We arrived at the school. We would see what I now know was the first sign something was terribly wrong. After checking in at the office, we made our way towards Mrs. Northrum's room. Everything was clean. The halls reflected a modern school, built and maintained with care. The brown tiling on the floor could almost hold a reflection, while the lockers that lined the walls were freshly painted avocado green. We waited outside of Mrs. Northrum's classroom for several minutes before she checked outside for us. Peeking around the door, she invited us in and motioned at two padded armchairs across from her desk. "Thank you for coming in today. What did you want to see us about? Is Lane adjusting to the class all right?" "Well, she seems to be engaging with the activities and doing her classwork, but there was something else I wanted to talk with you about." Her heavy tone betrayed her trepidation about discussing the matter further, but she seemed to steel herself before going on. Mrs. Northrum's quivering hand sank under the desk as she went for the drawer. The locking mechanism clicked open, and the bearing squealed as she opened it. She reached in and withdrew a manila envelope containing several pieces of A4 paper, clearly marked up with pen and crayon markings, and set it on the table. "Many children use art as a way to process issues at home, but I've never seen anything like this. Your daughter is obviously talented, but the subject of her drawings are troublesome." She reached into the folder and took a drawing from the top and set it before us. The scene depicted Sheila, curled up on a familiar green carpet, being torn apart and eaten by three strange figures. They appeared to be jet black mummies. Their arms and legs were stick thin, with their joints knobbed grotesquely. Their arms ended in long, thin hands with sharp, talon-like claws. The skin and faces reminded me of photos of bog mummies whose skin had been stained black by water. They appeared to be crouching around Sheila, peeling her skin and tearing flesh away. The drawing seemed to capture a moment when they had been interrupted, the three figures turning to look at the artist. No eyes, just empty sockets where eyes should be. My stomach started to turn. Some things did not benefit from Elaine's high-definition art style. I turned to Sheila to take in her response. She sat in the chair, arms crossed, tight-lipped, trying not to betray any response to the picture. "We try not to make children ashamed to express their creative side," droned Mrs. Northrum, "especially in situations where there are communication issues. However, Elaine's skills made her drawing choices particularly upsetting for the other students." She explained that she had held onto the drawing because she did not want to press it as an issue unless Elaine made more of them. "Elaine drew this earlier in the week." Mrs. Northrum reached into the folder resting between them and revealed a second drawing, clearly in the same realist style that Elaine had used for her other pictures. It depicted one of the black mummies from her previous drawing emerging from a husk-like skin of a woman. The thing was disrobing on a familiar green carpet. Where had I seen that carpet before? It reminded me of a cicada emerging from its pupal shell. Sheila maintained a poker face, trying not to betray any sense of betrayal or revulsion. Inspecting the drawing a second time, I recognized the dress. It was one of Sheila's. She had worn it several weeks ago. Sheila maintained her icy, unreactive shell throughout the remainder of Mrs. Northam's presentation. The teacher made some suggestions about ways we could encourage Elaine to focus on other subjects in her art, then finished the discussion with a pep talk about how Elaine was making real progress. That part of the conversation didn't really stick with me. The drawings, those remained. We took the drawings and agreed to speak with Elaine about her art. As we walked back to the car, the dam started to break. Sheila began to let down her guard. None of the implications from Elaine's drawings were particularly flattering. Elaine had always drawn things from life, never any of the typical phantasms that populate children's drawings. Did Elaine really see a mother like that, consumed by decrepit horrors and becoming one? As we got to the car, Sheila threw her face into my chest and began to gently weep. I nuzzled her head, trying to comfort her. I don't know. We got into our Honda CRV and began to drive home. I was behind the steering wheel while Sheila held the drawings. They were encased in the manila envelope, as if it could protect us from the contents. I focused on the road while Sheila absentmindedly stared out the window while a quiz program from NPR played in the background. I didn't notice until it was too late. Sheila opened the folder, removed the drawings, and began tearing them apart. "What are you doing?" "What the teacher should have done," Sheila responded, then lowered the passenger side window, dumping the fragments into the wind. Once we got home, Sheila marched directly to Elaine's room to confront her. I heard shouting, screaming, and finally stomping as Sheila came down the stairs with Elaine's art supplies. She marched over to the fireplace in our new house and dumped her supplies into the hearth. Everything went in, nothing would escape. She barked, "Go get a light, Mike." And then, to my lingering regret, I went to the kitchen and returned with a lighter. Sheila took it and stooped down. She began wadding drawings and placing them like tinder. Then, with a few rakes of the lighter's wheel, the remains of Elaine's hobby were burning. The fire spread quickly, and soon, all of the tools and papers were engulfed. Later, Elaine came downstairs and bore witness to her loss. She returned upstairs to sob, grieving over the loss of her expression. After this initial burning, Sheila instituted a general prohibition on Elaine's art. Periodically, in the following weeks, Sheila would find napkins with sketches. These always found their way to the fireplace. A few times, I caught glimpses of her pictures. The black mummy figures from her school drawings made regular appearances. In some pictures, they stood over beds, leering ominously. In other drawings, they seemed to be occupying the house, enjoying the amenities. All these drawings, or should I say warnings, were promptly ignored and destroyed. After Sheila began confiscating Elaine's art, their relationship sank even further. Elaine had been making progress and becoming more communicative before art was banned. She would smile when people she recognized entered the room. She now frowned and hissed at Sheila. She would still slip me a picture occasionally. It was always a picture of one of the black mummy things. Elaine and Sheila's drawn-out conflict fed into how I fathered her. Previously, if Elaine had a nightmare, I would go to comfort her. Now, anytime there was an issue, Sheila would assume control, getting out of bed to comfort Elaine, or at least put her back to sleep. Despite being the exclusive source of comfort for Elaine, her and her mother's relationship had only grown more fraught. Within the last couple weeks, Blaine has even refused to eat food Sheila's prepared for her. The second time she refused, I broke down and tried making Easy Mac, which she ate happily. This then touched off an argument between me and Sheila about who was in control of the parent-child relationship. I had just taken a long weekend. Since Elaine was no longer allowed art supplies in her class, she had lost so much of her motivation to go. This made it difficult to get her out of the house, but made her quite happy with a long weekend. Going to work on Tuesday, after the long weekend, was a letdown. The managers seem to expect you to fit all of the work you didn't do on your day off into the remaining 4 days. After a hectic workday, I pulled into our house's driveway. Popping open the front door, I slid out of the front seat of the CRV and grabbed my work satchel. I walked along the driveway and traced my steps up to the front porch. I stepped up to the front door and grabbed the knob and pushed. The door slid open quietly on its freshly oiled hinges. Stepping into the foyer and onto the green carpet, I was greeted by the sound of Sheila working in the kitchen. "Hello, honey. How was work? Come get some wine from the kitchen." I ambled left, down the hallway to the kitchen. Left-hand side of the hallway was taken up by a large walk-in closet with a door at the front. As I moved closer, the door silently opened. Rather than some boogeyman, Elaine stepped out of the closet and ushered me inside. I think now it would have been better to stay outside and remained ignorant. Playing along, I quickly stepped inside with her. She silently closed the door and flicked on a flashlight. At first, I was blinded by the light, pointing at my face. Elaine then aimed it deeper in the closet, past the coats, past the boxes, at the part of the closet I hadn't explored since we first moved earlier in the summer. Leaning against the wall was a long bundle. Black plastic bags were wrapped around a load that I didn't recognize. Why was there a carpet wrapped up in plastic bags resting in our closet? I looked back at Elaine, but she just gestured forward towards the bundle. It certainly hadn't been there when we unpacked. I wended my way through the boxes and clothes to have a closer look. I almost knocked over one of the particular stacks of boxes containing shoes, but caught myself before they were dislodged. The bundle itself leaned against the wall in the far corner. Squaring myself up to the wrappings, I reached out and began to tug at the top. The bags were wrapped tightly, forcing me to pull my pocket knife out. My delicate hacking started to yield progress with a decrepit package. Layers of plastic gave way to what appeared to be leather. Peeling the sack apart revealed a dark, leathery visage. It looked like a face made of jerky. Recognition began to lap at my heels. I felt as if the bottom of my stomach had fallen out. My knees turned to rubber. Bile began to creep up my throat. But when I turned to vomit, I was transfixed by Elaine's stare. I tried to tuck the plastic sheeting back in place to deny the existence of what I saw. Elaine's stare bore into me. She had always known. Reflecting on her change in behavior, it all started to make a kind of sense. The intensified conflict with her mother, the drawings. I had ignored every sign that something was happening since we moved. Swallowing my bile, I turned back to the bags and continued loosening the wrappings. I tried to avoid looking at the face while I went about my work. As I got further, I found a small silver chain hanging about the neck, holding a Celtic braid. It was caked with blood, but it was unmistakable. It was the one that belonged to Sheila. It occurred to me that maybe Elaine's drawings were a more direct warning than a cry for help. The picture of the black mummy creature emerging from Sheila's skin flashed through my head. Was it emerging or entering? I realized where I'd seen that green carpet before. It was the same carpet we had gotten when we moved into the house. The very carpet that laid in the foyer outside. I was ready to confront Sheila, or whatever that thing was. I made my way back towards the closet door, but Elaine threw her arms up as if to prevent me from leaving the closet. I'm lucky she did, because in the next moment, we heard faint footsteps coming from downstairs. Tap, 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 tap. She turned the flashlight off. Light shone from underneath the closet door. Then, two shadows, a matching pair of feet, traversed the doorway. From the look on Elaine's face, it was clear that the shadows belonged to something that we should be avoiding. We could hear faint voices, even through the closet door. I crouched next to it and held my ear to the door crack of the closet. I couldn't understand what was being said, but it sounded like Sheila, talking with a crackly, reedy voice. Suddenly, they stopped speaking. There was silence in the closet. Our doubt shielded us from having to know what was outside. The urge to hide washed over me in waves. I pulled my cell phone from my pocket and put it on silent. I leaned against the wall of the closet and slowly slid down to my ass. I'm not sure what to do now. I've been sitting here, thinking about everything for the last half an hour. Elaine is watching me intently now. Periodically, we hear more footsteps and more of the crackly, reedy speech. It is now well past the time I normally come home. Sheila heard me come in. I'm really worried. Worried that if I leave the closet, Sheila, or the thing wearing Sheila's skin, won't have time to pretend to be Sheila. Worried that this time, the Sheila thing will decide not to pretend. Worried about what will happen to Elaine, who is apparently always known. Whatever I do, I need to choose fast. Sheila just texted me. "Where are you?" Winky face.